League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hello and welcome to the first of what we intend to be many glorious editions of The Tottenham Way, a new Spurs podcast. And after all, the world has been clamoring for one of those during these dark winter months. The aim is to focus on the bigger picture with regard to the club via in-depth discussions and interviews, rather than looking into the minutiae of every game, which is brilliantly done, of course, by a number of other podcasts. My name is Marcus Buckland, a football, tennis and golf television and radio broadcaster for more years than I care to remember, and afflicted by the Tottenham curse since the 1976-77 season, which ended in relegation. I should have run a mile there and then, but alas, I was hooked, and despite everything, remain obsessed, often depressed, and occasionally walking on top of the world while following this remarkable club. Making up our regular panel, though occasionally one may be absent for emotional reasons. First of all, the chief football correspondent of the Evening Standard, Dan Kilpatrick, who has this week been chatting with Harry Kane about his contract situation. Hello to you, Dan. Tell us, first of all, exactly what Harry had to say.
Hello, Marcus. Yeah, first of all, I'm not really sure why I'm doing this and volunteering myself on more Spurs content out of hours, but I am very excited to be starting the show. So it's me and Tom Barkley, who you're about to hear as well, spoke to Harry, among others, at Fulham, after the Fulham game recently. And we spoke about his new contract, and I think it's fair to say he was pretty non-committal. He said he would be beginning conversations, or he expected to begin conversations with the club in the coming months, but he made it pretty clear that his focus was on finishing the season strongly rather than contract talks. He said he wanted to still be successful with Spurs. He said he wanted Conte to stay. I think overall, an interview that shouldn't depress Spurs fans necessarily, but certainly wasn't the cause for kind of wild optimism and enthusiasm either. So fair to say Kane keeping his options open, I think.
Well, listen, any good news or semi-good news at the moment is absolutely welcome. Now, top football journalist for The Times and previously AFP's man in Spain, Tom Allnutt, is also going to be a regular member of the panel. And Tom, you've been following in particular the developments regarding Fabio Paratici of late. Of course, he's been banned from working in Italian football for 2.5 years. What sort of an impact do you think that might have on Spurs?
Hi, Marcus. Thanks for having me, everybody. It's great to be here. The launch of another Spurs pod. Fantastic. It's obviously been it feels like every single one of the kind of key figures at Spurs right now is sort of got doubts hanging over their heads, right? I mean, you've got Conte, we don't know if he's going to be here beyond the summer. Kane, we don't know if he's going to be here beyond the summer. And now, you know, the director of football as well, Paratici, we don't know if he's going to be here beyond the next couple of months. So it's very much kind of uncertainty reigning all around the club. I think with Paratici, the main thing is now we have to wait. I mean, the club are waiting for the process to go through, for the appeal to go through as well. And then they'll find out the final decision. I mean, clearly, if that decision holds as it is now and Paratici's ban remains in place and is also extended so that it applies beyond Italy, then that's going to be a serious problem for Spurs and his position will basically become untenable, of course, and that will have ramifications for Conte's future as well, I might imagine. So let's see. Nothing as straightforward as Spurs as ever.
That is for sure. So that's Tom Allnutt, forevermore known as Tom A on this podcast, because we also have the Sun's senior football writer, Tom Barkley. So obviously Tom B, Tom A and Tom B, we'll get used to it. And Tom B, no Spurs discussion is complete without mentioning the name of Daniel Levy, who again had a fair few chants aimed in his general direction at Fulham on Monday night. He's walked a tightrope a number of times over the years. Just how tight a position do you think he finds himself in right now?
Well, hi, Marcus. Good to be on the podcast. Just first of all, I'm actually relatively new to covering Tottenham, having started sort of middle of last year, and don't really have as much skin in the game in terms of being a Spurs fan. But I've got a lot of friends who are, and so I hope to bring maybe quite a slightly maybe more not more objective view, but a view that's slightly more dispassionate towards Tottenham. When it comes to Daniel Levy, yes, he has had a few chants of late, which I think started at the Aston Villa game where they lost 2-0, and that's where it began, and is regularly in most of the games that I've been to since, seems to have cropped up, particularly the away matches. I believe City, Crystal Palace, which I was at, definitely there was that, and then right from the off against Fulham. So it wasn't like they'd gone the goal down and then the fans decided to sort of take their frustrations out on Daniel Levy. It was right from the off, so clearly they're making a point. Personally, I feel like I can understand where the fans are coming from. It seems to sort of hark back particularly to the times under Mauricio Pochettino, when a lot of fans felt that the club should have spent more money at the time and maybe squandered the chance to really win a trophy then. I think if you're taking it on this season alone, it's perhaps not as fair, at least from the summer, given that they spent near to 130 million. Yes, they haven't spent any money in the January transfer window, although things could change on that front. I imagine it's quite an uncomfortable position for him to be in right now. And the feeling I get is that, I guess if they go on to win a trophy or if he somehow convinces Harry Kane to sign a new contract, then maybe things can change. But the fact that these chants keep happening game after game and are happening from the beginning means that there are some fans, and particularly the sort of diehard fans who go to all the away games, who are going to be hard-pressed to change their minds on Daniel Levy.
Yeah, the frustration is intensifying, and it's been brewing for the last 20 years at least, hasn't it? Now, we are recording this pilot the day after the Monday night game at Fulham, and we'll reflect on that briefly before then turning our attention to this week's main topic, and it's a Hugo Lloris special on a very special goalkeeper who, according to many, is now past his best and ready to be moved on after more than a decade of service at Spurs. But of course, he did keep a clean sheet on Monday, and there was that record equaling goal for Harry Kane, 266 now in 415 appearances, equaling Jimmy Greaves, who actually got there in 379. Tom B, just how big a deal is it for Kane to match the great Jimmy Greaves?
It's huge. I mean, it's a record that stood for 53 years. It's a record that many didn't think would be broken, albeit now with Kane, whatever happens to his future, whether he were to leave the club in the summer, the next summer, or even stay for longer, you feel like he's going to set a record quite a lot higher than it is now. I feel like whenever I write about Kane, the same with the other guys, I'm sure it just becomes a numbers game because his stats are just baffling. You know, we're talking sort of the same as when you write about Messi or Ronaldo, obviously not quite to that level, but it's just he seems to be nearing a record or on a record every single game. Now he's on one shy of 200 Premier League goals. I feel like with Jimmy Greaves, he was playing in, whilst we can all appreciate the stature that he has in the game and read about him and see his numbers, for particularly people of my generation, we didn't ever, his playing days were long before we were even alive. So I feel like whilst we can appreciate what an achievement that is for Harry Kane, if he then goes past Alan Shearer in the Premier League era, which is obviously 61 goals off matching it now, that's when people might really fully appreciate just what an amazing player he is. And personally, as someone, despite the accent, who grew up idolising Alan Shearer and as a Newcastle fan, I feel like I am starting to come around to the idea that Harry Kane might actually be better than he was. But I'm not quite there yet, and he's still got another 60 goals to... Prove me wrong, but yeah,
he'll get there, mate. Don't you worry.
I think he will.
It should be added, of course, that Jimmy Greaves had also, I think, scored something like 140 odd goals for Chelsea and a fair few for AC Milan before he joined Spurs in the prime of his career. But it was a different era. Remarkable players, both of them in their different ways. So, Dan, of course, Kane was the headline maker, but from a defensive point of view, it was a clean sheet. How do you think the defence actually dealt with the Fulham pressure on what looked like being a very difficult night for them?
Yeah, I think they did all right. It reminded me of the 1-0 win at Brighton in October, which was just after Giampiero Ventroni's death, when Spurs didn't play particularly exciting stuff, but they really kind of dug in and ground out an important win. I felt it was the same at Craven Cottage. They were under the cosh and played pretty poorly in the first half an hour, 35 minutes. And they were under the cosh at the end. But they held strong and they looked like a proper defensive unit again. And Conte was pretty insightful afterwards, and Kane was as well, in fact, in the interview Tom and I did, speaking about how they'd had a meeting in the week and talked about getting back to basics, talked about being resilient and compact and hard to beat again. And obviously their defending has just been hideous since the start of October, really, since that Brighton game, more or less. I think... they had the worst defensive record in the league from between the Brighton game and the Fulham game. And in the 10 games up to Fulham, they conceded two goals or more in nine of them. So they were really all over the place, and they really needed that clean sheet. They really needed to cut out the individual errors. And given that they were playing against Mitrovic, who is, you know, one of the form forwards in the league this season, I think it was a job well done, and you know, long may it continue.
Definitely. You touched on Conte there. Tom A, you never quite know what you're going to get from Antonio after a win or a draw or a defeat. What sort of a mood was he in after that match?
The first thing to notice was the reaction with the away fans after the final whistle. I mean, I was in the press box, so it was one of those things you kind of see on television about half an hour later. But to see him like that, I think was almost as encouraging as the performance, I think, or as encouraging as the result even, because I really think that Tottenham's kind of run in here, that the next kind of 2 or 3 months of this season depends so much on Conte's mindset, on how Conte kind of views this remaining chapter. You know, I think if he can kind of get his fire back, his sort of his passion, of course, is that sort of nasty streak, that winning mentality we were associated with Conte. If he can get that back, I think it's really contagious. You know, I think we saw that last season when he came in, that spread really quickly. But equally, we know that there's another side to Conte, that when he sort of gets his when he gets back up about something, when he has the hump, when he gets irritable, you know, everything can become slightly toxic. And the morale around the club, I think, in the last few weeks has been very much, you know, deflated. And I think to see him like that just sort of suggests that maybe there could be some hope for the next few weeks, for the next few months. And I think, you know, everything at Spurs is so much kind of teetering on the brink at the moment. You know, when there's a win, you think, okay, they're, you know, only three points off fourth. They're in the last 16 of the Champions League. They're in the FA Cup, which, by the way, could be a very open draw, I think, this year. And everything looks potentially quite rosy. But then when they lose a game and play terribly, you know, you think, blimey, this whole thing could unravel. They're going to lose, you know, some really key figures, and everything might have to start again. So it's very much, as we know with Conte, results dependent. But if you ask me what he looked like after the match, he looked like he was plugged in again. He was very positive about the idea of solidity, the team being getting back to kind of what it was last year, being more focused, more even kind of suggesting there's a slight sort of mindset shift, that maybe the players were kind of getting back to grinding out wins, to showing that kind of that fighting spirit that maybe they just have lacked in the last few weeks. So overall, I think it was a very positive night for Spurs, one that really kind of suggested that with a fully fit team, they could maybe kick on from here in the next few weeks.
Well, let us hope so. They are fifth on 36 points from 21, played three behind Newcastle and Manchester United, as you mentioned. They both got a game in hand. Seven clear of Liverpool. They do have two games in hand. Seven clear of Chelsea, who have one game in hand. And of course, we mustn't forget Brighton, Fulham and Brentford, who are all very much in the European picture as well. OK, it is now time to focus on our main topic, and that is Tottenham's longest serving player, who arrived from Lyon in August 2012, but whose future is now very unclear. He is, of course, Hugo Hadrian Dominique Lloris, a World Cup winner, the most capped Frenchman ever, with 145 international appearances. But with reference to his second name, Hadrian, is the wall crumbling? Are his days numbered in North London? His contract is up in 18 months, but will he last beyond the summer? We're going to take a look at his form, his legacy, possible replacements, and speak to a friend of arguably Tottenham's best goalkeeper since Pat Jennings back in the 1970s. But what's very clear, guys, is that his recent form has been poor, awful, you could say. Errors against Aston Villa, against Arsenal, and then against Manchester City. And Dan, I know you spoke to him after the City game. What did he have to say for himself?
Yeah, I did a quick interview with him in the Mix Zone after the City game and asked him about his form. He admitted that he was suffering slightly with mental freshness after the World Cup. And I think when we speak to Lloris's friend, Vincent Deluc, later in the show, he'll reference that as well. But I do think that's something that perhaps has been a little bit overlooked, that Lloris captained France to a heartbreaking defeat in a World Cup final in kind of agonising circumstances just over a month ago, and then has since announced his retirement from international football. These are big kind of ruptures in his life and career. So he mentioned that and also talked about the mistakes against Arsenal and City, and to be honest, kind of absolved himself of blame for them, really. He doesn't, you know, Lloris doesn't see them as mistakes. He said both took deflections. He said the Arsenal one was something he couldn't have done if he tried to do it. You know, the way the ball hit his chest. I think, you know, that's a very generous interpretation from his point of view. But I do think, you know, in order to get to the top, competitors like Lloris have to have this kind of cast iron self-belief at all times. And I think it's the reason they get where they are. It's the reason they're so great. But it's also the reason that when things don't go so well, they haven't got that ability to kind of introspect and self-criticise that perhaps someone without that kind of insane self-belief would have. So, yeah, Hugo not owning up to his mistakes, but frank about the fact that he perhaps could have done with more of a break after the World Cup. And I have to say, on Spurs, you know, looking forward positively and hopefully to the second half of the campaign, similar to Kane after Fulham, just kind of hoping that they can do this year what they did last year and kick on.
And Tom A, is this the inevitable decline of a 30-something, or do you think there are other significant factors at bay that Dan has sort of hinted at just then?
I think it would be entirely understandable for those factors to be having an effect. You know, I think, you know, we've all talked a lot this season about what the possible impact of the World Cup might be on players. And I think Hugo Lloris is an example of how those factors could possibly play to the absolute extremes. You know, he went right to the end of the tournament. So in terms of fatigue, he has all those kind of minutes in the bank. I think emotionally, obviously, he went right to the end but didn't win. So in that way, it was an extremely tough tournament to recover from for him. He also came back very quickly. You know, he was on the bench for that first game back against Villa, was it? Brentford, was it? Yeah, Brentford. Didn't start, but was there. And maybe actually in hindsight, they could have given him a bit of a longer rest, you know. So I think for sure that all those factors are definitely playing into this. But I think the bigger picture here is Lloris is clearly coming to the end of his peak years and possibly, you know, his career overall. I think, you know, he's been a fantastic servant for Spurs. There's no doubt about that. I guess the big question is, who's been the luckier? You know, have Spurs been very lucky to have Lloris, or has Lloris been lucky to have Spurs? I guess in some ways, I almost think they've been a very good match for each other. That's almost kind of their characteristics are quite similar. Almost, you know, one of the best in Europe, but maybe not quite. At times fantastic, but also prone to kind of being fragile and disappointing you in the big moments. And even right down to the fact that Lloris is a very nice guy, you know, like extremely well liked by everyone who meets him, always smells very nice in the mix zone, comes out in the shower with lovely French perfume on. You know, and everyone you speak to at Spurs always says, you know, the one thing that always comes out about Lloris is, you know, a fantastic character, brilliant leader, wonderful role model in the dressing room. And I think if we go back kind of maybe to the early years, I think sort of 2014, I remember, was a time when Lloris was definitely looking to leave Spurs. I think Pochettino was a massive, massive part in Lloris becoming almost the Lloris that we know now at Tottenham, becoming someone who really felt his role at the club was bigger than just as a goalkeeper. And I think he always felt his future was very much attached to Pochettino. But actually, in the end, Pochettino's job was done, because by the time Pochettino left, Lloris felt so part of the fabric at Spurs. I think he felt that he was going to be here until the end of his career, or at least right until the end. So I guess in summary, you know, I kind of think Lloris has been a really very, very good player for Tottenham. But I think it probably is now time for the club to start looking at replacements. And maybe they should have done that 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about some possible replacements in just a moment. I mean, it's interesting there. You say that, you know, Pochettino loved him, had a great combination, and Maurizio considered him an auxiliary member of his coaching staff. Antonio Conte is a very staunch supporter of him as well, as you'd expect. Jose Mourinho had no doubts about him. What, Tomby, do you think it is that really appeals to the coaches so much that perhaps we, the fans, don't necessarily see when he's out on the pitch?
I think Tom touched on quite a lot of it there. I mean, essentially, I think it comes down to his influence in the dressing room and on the pitch. Just seems huge. He's obviously quite a softly spoken guy, but he's got an air of authority about him. You got glimpses of it in that Amazon documentary. Although ironically, my biggest sort of takeaways from that was how much he sort of got very shouty ahead of kickoff, trying to gee the boys up ahead of the games. But whenever you speak to him in the mix zone, he's obviously very well spoken and very calm. And you can tell that he's an intelligent guy. It's not surprising with his, you know, his mum was a lawyer. I think his dad was a banker. He's clearly very educated. And I can see why, with that kind of eloquence and that influence on his teammates, that would be appealing for a manager to have someone like that in the dressing room. And the fact that, you know, how often is it really, generally, that you get a goalkeeper who's the captain, let alone one who's he's got 145 caps for France, which is a record, and 121 of them were as captain. He's been captain for Spurs since, was it the 2015-16 season? So he's clearly a really, you know, when it comes to influence, he's clearly one of the most influential kind of players out there. Who probably wouldn't be surprised if he went on to a managerial career when it comes to that side of the game. And as you're right, both we asked Conte recently after one of his, you know, number of mistakes he's made, particularly since the return of the World Cup. You know, is there a chance that you're starting to have second thoughts about him, maybe bring him out? And he said, and Conte's response was unequivocal. He said, if we start to doubt our top players like Harry, Son and Hugo, then we will be in real trouble. Now, you could argue that they were his mistakes of late have been putting them in real trouble already. But the fact that it's not just Antonio Conte said that, Pochettino has had a similar experience with mistakes that Lloris has made and stuck by him, just shows how much of a good character and an influential character he must have on that dressing room.
Just to pick up, if I can, just remember a Pochettino press conference shortly after the Champions League semi-final, where there'd been a story that come out that Harry Kane, who was injured obviously at the time, had come in at half-time and kind of inspired the dressing room with a talk. Tom A, you might have been in the press, you might remember what I'm talking about, but Pochettino made a point of saying, yes, Harry came in, but it was actually Hugo Lloris who did the halftime team talk. And I think there's a view at Spurs that Lloris perhaps doesn't get the credit he deserves as a player, and particularly as a captain and leader. And I thought that was a very revealing moment from Pochettino, both in terms of the influence Lloris has in the dressing room, but also in the way that perhaps the media perceives that dressing room and the way the club perceives the dressing room. There's a very much a view at Spurs that Lloris is the man to listen to at big moments. And I think that was reflected in what Pochettino said then.
And he's clean smelling as well, which has to be a big plus. Well, a journalist from L'Équipe who specialises in English football and the French national team, Vincent Duluc, Dan made reference to him a few moments ago, has known Hugo Lloris for many years. And ahead of the Fulham game the other night, Dan had a quick chat with him.
Vincent, you know Hugo very well. It's been a difficult period for him since the World Cup. He's made a few high-profile mistakes for Tottenham. I know you've spoken to him several times since you've been in England, including after the Crystal Palace game. You had a long chat with him. Give us an insight into how Hugo's feeling, his mindset, what's going on with him at the moment.
Well, to be honest, I don't know his exact feeling regarding his mistakes. He doesn't speak a lot about this. We just know he's in a good mood or bad mood. Yes, and he was in a bad mood after the Villa game, and he was in a bad mood after the North London derby. So, but I think most of all, he was really tired, exhausted after the World Cup, and I think he would have needed some day off that he didn't get, because he was back in London on the 20th of December, 2 days after the World Cup final, and he was back at the training session on Christmas Day. So he had really only four days off at home, and I think it was not enough. He needed to come back with a fresh spirit, and he came back with a loaded spirit, was because of the World Cup, because also he was wondering about his international future with the French team. So he said to me on the day of the Villa game, so on I think it was the, yes, on New Year's Day, he said to me, "I don't have enough time to think. I don't have even the time to think about my internal future." So, well, we all knew that he would stop to play with the French team, but I think it was a huge decision for him. And the week he decided to make this announcement public, I think it was emotionally very difficult for him, even at 36, even with so many games behind him. And I thought, yes, that his mistake, they come from there.
What's the feeling in France about what Lloris might do next? I mean, he's retired in international football. What about his club future? He's got 18 months still left at Spurs. Is there a view that he might go on and fulfil that contract, or that he'll be looking at something new in the summer?
Well, to be fair, he won't be the same item for media now that he will no longer be the captain and the goalkeeper of the French team. So I think everybody, except me, of course, but I think everybody will just wait and see if he can have a much better second part of the season, and if he can keep his position as a goalkeeper number one of Tottenham next season. Well, I think it depends of several factors, including the coach, including the future. We all heard rumors, of course, about a goalkeeper who could replace him in Spurs. So we'll have to wait. I think I'm not sure he's willing to come back in France, you know, Jeff, in a semi-retirement. I think his kids love London, his wife loves London, so I think even if it was over with Tottenham, I would be very surprised he would leave England so soon. And really, I don't know, but I think he has, of course, the skills and the character to come back from this very difficult period.
He's obviously given
the best years of his career, almost his whole career, really, to Tottenham without winning anything. I remember when he joined Spurs, I think Deschamps said something to the effect of, it's a bit beneath him. I wondered, what's the view in France about the fact that your World Cup winning captain, your record appearance holder, has kind of given over all his years to this project that hasn't really ever come to fruition? I mean, is there a sense that he could have done more, that he's almost wasted his career at Spurs?
Well, I think there is two ways of thinking about this. One way is, of course, there is a lack of trophies. Usually, it's something that we don't say anymore in France since the World Cup 2018, of course, because it is a huge achievement and it's the biggest trophy on earth. But when he signed for Lyon in 2008, Lyon had been seven times champion in 7 years. And when he came, Lyon stopped to be champion. And in four years, he only won a French Cup against a second division team. So yes, we think he was cursed. But since Russia in 2018, we don't think he's cursed anymore. So the other aspect of his career, of course, is loyal. This fidelity to one club. I think it's like Harry Kane, who's been discussing a radio about his next contract. I think there is a bond with the club and with the fans. I'm not sure that the bond is that strong in two ways right now, but it may come back.
Great. Thanks very much, Vincent.
Well, some really interesting points from Vincent, and it's going to be fascinating over the next 2 or 3 months to see how Lloris settles, if he can rediscover his very best form, even if the end is nigh. Of course, sooner or later, he will go. And Spurs, I think, probably don't fully appreciate what they'll lose until he does finally walk out of the door with his clubs for the last time. In terms of possible replacements, guys, the names I've heard bandied about: Jordan Pickford, David Rea, Jan Oblak, Gregor Kobel, the Swiss keeper from Borussia Dortmund. I mean, familiar names. Let's start with Jordan Pickford, who has been criticised down at club level more than once, has been almost flawless when playing for England. How highly do you rate Jordan Pickford?
Yeah, well, Pickford's an interesting case because he does seem to get a lot of stick from Everton fans, or at least other Premier League fans, perhaps that's fairer to say, for mistakes domestically. But I tend to watch him for England in my role sort of covering the English national team. And yeah, he's barely put a foot wrong in the last three major tournaments. In fact, he's been a huge asset, I would say, to England at the 2018 World Cup, the run to the Euros final, and again in Qatar. He's good with his feet, which is so important, as we know, for a goalkeeper nowadays. He tends to make big saves, and he's also a kind of big presence and a big character. So I think he ticks a lot of the boxes. And I think perhaps the fact that he's been hammered domestically is a kind of reminder that, and this is perhaps something that Spurs fans have overlooked, given that Lloris has been their goalkeeper for so long, but the vast majority of goalkeepers do make mistakes every season. You know, it's part and parcel of the job. Their mistakes are generally more costly than mistakes by outfield players and generally get highlighted more. But I think Pickford would certainly be a decent choice for Spurs, particularly if Everton go down and it's a kind of case of picking off their assets because they're in a difficult situation. He's homegrown as well, which I think is something which would appeal to the club, given they've got a little bit of a problem in that area. I know Pickford divides opinion, like many players, and there'd be a lot of Spurs fans who would be underwhelmed by him. But I think he, if there is serious interest, there would be a pretty smart choice.
Yeah, well, we're good at cherry picking from Everton. We got Richarlison last summer, so maybe we will go back there again. Tom, I've got to say that whenever I see Atletico Madrid play, I'm really impressed with their goalkeeper. What is his situation, and do you think he'd be a good fit at Tottenham?
I mean, you'd be a great fit. I mean, Jan Oblak is, in my opinion, I think it was maybe 2 or 3 years ago when he was very much in the conversation for being the best goalkeeper in the world, I think. I think it is probably true that with Atletico's kind of recent demise, his form in the last year or so has not been quite as faultless as it was. But I still think there's no doubt he's still in the kind of top five goalkeepers in the world. His style is very kind of much no fuss. He's big, he's strong, he's powerful, very good at holding on to the ball all the time. He's sort of opposite of Lloris in that way. He doesn't kind of catch the eye often because things just tend to stick with him. So it's not so much about tipping balls over the crossbar or, you know, spectacular acrobatic saves. It's more that everything kind of just holds in his hands. And he's also kind of quite a no-fuss kind of character, to be honest. He's what you see is kind of what you get, very sort of short hair, muscular frame. He doesn't do that many interviews. He's just he's a very solid, sound goalkeeper. I guess the one doubt you might have in this kind of modern context now is that he's always slightly maybe not in the kind of same class as goalkeepers like Ter Stegen, you know, with his feet, and that might depend on who the next coach is, or if it is still Conte in the summer, how much of a big deal that is. But absolutely, he'd be a first class option. But the problem they would have, Tottenham, in my opinion, is that he has a 120 million euro release clause, and as is the case in Spain generally, they tend to point to that when teams come knocking for players. I don't think Tottenham would spend that on a goalkeeper. His contract goes until 2028. He signed a new one last summer in 2022. So even if Oblak fancied a change, and I think that's not impossible, particularly if Simeone leaves in the summer, I think Spurs would find it quite difficult to pay the money and to make the deal work. But he would be a great signing. But I suspect that the other couple of goalkeepers you mentioned might be more realistic.
Okay, yeah. Well, that's interesting. So some issues about him. Pickford, maybe a little underwhelming, as Dan mentioned. So, Tom B, does that make David Raya, whichever way you say it, the most realistic option? He certainly has enhanced his reputation over the past few months, hasn't he?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, in one of my previous roles before covering Tottenham, I used to cover the Football League, particularly the Championship, and below did a lot of, you know, interviews and things like that across the league. I watched a lot of Championship football, and David Raya really came onto my radar when he was playing for Blackburn and really impressed there. And, you know, Brentford, in the way that they do, clever scouting system, they picked him up and have turned him into a Spanish international who went to the World Cup. Remember, David De Gea didn't go. And I knew he was good with his feet. And you only have to look at a great quote from Jurgen Klopp last season about him, saying he should have a number 10 on his back with the balls he's played, I presume, after a Liverpool-Brentford game. And Raya himself has said how he knows that his ability with his feet is what sets him apart. Yeah, and undoubtedly his ability with his feet is very impressive. Reading off stats can be a bit dull, but some of them really do show how good he is with his feet this season. 757 passes this season, that's compared to Lloris's 491. Obviously, Brentford probably play a bit more of a possession-based style than Tottenham, so that comes into it. But it's not just that, it's the amount of passes forward, the amount of touches. But it's not just with his feet that seems to be really impressive. He's actually made more saves than any other goalkeeper in the Premier League this season with 86. Lloris is fifth with 62. And pretty much on every metric, as they say, when it comes to goalkeeping stats, he is doing better than Lloris this season for a very exciting Brentford team. But obviously a Brentford team that quite open and aren't, you know, don't have the expectation on them like Tottenham do. He's out of contract. Same as Lloris, the end of next season. Brentford, being the club that they are, having covered them, you know, for many years from their time in the Football League, they're not the kind of club that will let him leave on a free transfer if he doesn't sign a new contract. I very much expect him to be sold in the summer because that's the way they work, and we've seen it so many times over the years with the likes of Ollie Watkins, Benrahma, maybe even Tony one day. But I imagine he would go for a relatively cheap fee. You know, 15 to 20 million is what's been suggested. There has been mooted interest from Man United and Chelsea as well, so it might not be just the only Tottenham might not be the only option. But I just think he makes a lot of sense. He's a very Tottenham signing, and the more I look into how he's played and the stats to back it up, he seems to be one of the most exciting keepers that are emerging at the moment.
Really, you've convinced me.
Sorry, Mark, I was just going to say, it's really interesting in Spain when he got called up for the World Cup, because no one in Spain basically knew who David Raya was. And so he had all these pieces coming out kind of saying, who is David Raya? Who is the World Cup goalkeeper you've never heard of? You know, like, because it's an incredible, I mean, he was born in Barcelona. He's a Real Madrid fan and loves Iker Casillas, but he moved to Blackburn, you know, moved to Lancashire when he was 16, I think, you know, and so it's almost like they were kind of saying in Spain, you know, he has the sort of the Spanish style and the technique, but he's got the kind of English physical presence and toughness, and I don't know if that kind of combination is a little bit too simplified, but it was in Spain they're still finding out about him as well, which is interesting. But he's very highly rated for sure.
Just on that, Tom, I mean, I wonder, I was just thinking, you know, if he came over at 16, I know he had a loan at Southport, could he also be eligible for being a homegrown player as well, which would come into it as well if he'd been there for such a young age? So that would obviously be attractive, you know, Dan, the points that Dan made when it comes to Pickford. Just regarding anyone else, you know, regarding homegrown goalkeepers, obviously Dean Henderson's position at Man United will be interesting as a player who's been linked to Spurs before, if De Gea is to sign a new contract, and the way Henderson, you know, has been quite open and quite vocal in interviews about wanting to play when his loan's up at Nottingham Forest, you know, maybe that might be a potential option. And one player that I particularly like, who's actually in the same squad as David Raya, is Robert Sanchez at Brighton, who having covered a lot of Brighton under Graham Potter, really emerged. And it seemed to be in a similar stock to Raya in terms of the ability with his feet, the aerial prowess, shot-stopping ability. He seems to have it all as well, albeit I imagine Sanchez, particularly with the way Brighton are pretty drive a hard bargain, he would cost a lot. So Raya, the more I think about it, I think he makes a lot of sense.
He does. You know, you have convinced me. A Raya of sunshine, could we say, possibly.
Very nice, Mark.
Summer.
Very nice.
Thank you so much. Now, I've been working on that one for a while.
I prepared that one, or was that just off the cuff?
Do a bit of preparation occasionally. let's finish then with Hugo and his legacy and what it will be, Tom B, when all is said and done. Unless something happens over the next few months, sadly, he will not leave with a trophy. He perhaps blotted his copybook with a drink driving incident a few years ago. Is he tarnished by all that to a degree?
I don't think so. I mean, as someone who, as I said before, doesn't support Spurs and is coming, you know, relatively new to sort of following every cough and spit of Tottenham, I had sort of forgotten about that incident. I don't think that really is something that sort of weighs heavily in anyone's mind on that front. Obviously, it wasn't his finest hour, but I don't think it'll tarnish his image. I think he's someone who'll be seen as a very good servant, who was an excellent, still is a very good shot stopper, as he proved, you know, against Fulham. It's ironic, isn't it, when we talk about someone like David Raya being so good with his feet and the mistakes or the nervousness that Hugo Lloris has had at times with the ball at his feet this season, that it, you know, going back through articles about Lloris back from the sort of, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago, he was hailed for being one of the best goalkeepers in the world with his feet. It just shows how the game has moved on. And I think when he signed, he was the perfect signing for Tottenham, perfect modern day keeper for that time to take them onto the next level. He was for the time decent with his feet, but he was particularly good at coming off his line, being that sort of sweeper keeper, an excellent shot stopper. And you know, particularly I think that sort of 16-17 season, that famous save against Javier Hernandez on the goal line against Bayer Leverkusen sticks out, and he was very good then. But maybe now the game has sort of moved past that, and we're now at a point, you know, particularly post Edison, where more is expected of a goalkeeper, even in a team like Conte, which aren't as heavily focused on possession. You can just tell by the amount of times we watch Spurs play and the nervous moments come up when the ball goes back to the goalkeeper. Personally, I don't know if he'll go down as a legend, even though he's had so many games for Tottenham, unless he wins something by the end of this season. But I don't think you can sort of look back at his time at Spurs and say, oh, he was the reason they never won anything. If anything, during that period, he was probably one of their biggest strengths.
Just to pick up on that, sorry, Marcus. It's interesting thinking about it, that Brad Friedel was Lloris's predecessor, which I think just says a lot about how long Lloris has been around. You know, Brad Friedel really feels like he belongs in a completely different era of Premier League goalkeepers. You know, he was very good for Spurs. He must be in his 50s now, but you know, he was very much a kind of stay on his line keeper, sort of slow and steady, wins the race type goalkeeper. And Lloris, as you said, was kind of hailed as this modern replacement. And now it feels like Lloris is very much kind of outdated in terms of the way he kicks. So, it does speak to sort of how long he's been at Spurs and perhaps how that's slightly overlooked.
I mean, I think talking to a fair few Spurs fans, most think would agree that he is probably the best goalkeeper since, well, either Pat Jennings or Ray Clements, who of course had his peak years at Liverpool, but also produced a magnificent displays for Tottenham in the early 80s. But Tom A, for you, will Lloris go down as a Tottenham legend?
He'll be one of the players that people will always remember as being hugely associated with this era of Tottenham. And I think we have to remember where Tottenham were almost when Lloris came in. I mean, it was very much the transition period between Spurs being what they are now, which, you know, is one of the biggest European teams, I guess, consistently challenging for the Champions League, from what they were before, I think. And Lloris has almost signified, I think, that step up. You know, when Spurs signed Lloris, he was very much rated as one of the most promising, one of the most outstanding up-and-coming goalkeepers. It was a huge coup, really, for Spurs to get him. I mean, everyone in France was completely bewildered as to why he was going to Spurs. And I think it was almost, you know, kind of ahead of his time in that way. It was almost like one of the first Premier League signings in terms of someone going to the Premier League, because that was where everyone was sort of going to at that point. I don't know. It's a difficult question to answer. I almost think that he will be remembered very, very fondly. Legend, yes, if you want to say that, because I think people will feel so affectionately towards him as a character, as a person, as a figure, for his performances purely. I think if we're being really sort of cold-hearted about it, I don't think he is up there, you know, with the kind of best, you know, he's not in the same bracket as Kane, for example. You know, he's not in the same bracket as some of the sort of real top Tottenham players in the club's history. But I think, no doubt, he'll be very much associated with this era of Pochettino, and he'll be missed. I'm no doubt about that. He'll be missed, certainly in the dressing room, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to see him. I mean, we all want Harry Kane more than anything else to lift some silverware. I mean, if it's going to happen, I don't know, but we all want that. But I'd love Lloris. I mean, he's been around for such a long time, and he has produced some magnificent performances. So hopefully there's going to be a happy ending. We heard Vincent mentioning how he was cursed really at club level, but winning the World Cup did lift that curse to some degree. Dan, we're coming to the end, but your abiding memories of Lloris, and where do you think he might go next? There has been talk about the MLS of late too, hasn't there?
Yeah, I mean, to tackle that first, I do think the MLS makes sense. I mean, it was interesting to hear Vincent earlier say he thinks Lloris won't get back to France for semi-retirement. I thought a return to Nice, a kind of romantic homecoming, might be an option for him, but it sounds like the people he's speaking to don't think that's likely. It's kind of hard to see where he might stay in London if he really wanted to sort of remain in the capital. So, yeah, I do think America could be a good option for him. You know, it's a nice lifestyle, and, you know, he should be able to convince Marine, is it, his wife and his kids maybe to go over there. And, you know, a lot of players do that, you know, in the sunshine for a couple of years. Yeah, I mean, in terms of his abiding memories, I mean, I've got a few. I've got to say one moment that always sticks out for me was not on the pitch. It was his interview after Spurs lost to Dinamo Zagreb under Mourinho in the, was it the Europa League or the Conference League? I think it was the Europa League.
God knows, one of those forgotten league nights anyway.
They were 2-0 up from the first leg and lost 3-0, and Mislav Orsic scored a hat-trick. And it was kind of memorable because I think the Dinamo Zagreb manager was in prison at the time and still managed to get better at Mourinho. But Lloris came out and it really felt like a low moment for the club. It was all going sour, and said it was an absolute disgrace, and did one of the best post-match flash interviews I've ever seen. One of the most compelling ones anyway. That sticks in my mind for some reason. Perhaps it's because we all, you know, as reporters and supporters, kind of wanted someone in the dressing room to front up and kind of lay that all bare. And he did that. And I think it was perhaps one of the first times, apart from the Amazon documentary, that we got this kind of glimpse of Lloris, the captain and leader, and what he might be like behind the scenes, that kind of makes him such a respected captain for Spurs. So that sticks in my mind. And also just in terms of on the pitch, he was obviously kind of synonymous with many of the great times of the Pochettino era. As you alluded to earlier, Pochettino kind of considered him an auxiliary member of the coaching staff. I think under Poch, he kind of had more... He certainly had more seniority and kind of leeway than many other members of the squad. And he was leaned on, invited into Pochettino's office for coaching chats in a way that no other player was, not even Harry Kane. And I think he did step up in the pitch in big moments. I mean, the run to the Champions League final, I think he was great, particularly the Dortmund game. I think away from home, he made a string of just great saves. It was kind of Lloris at his shot-stopping best. So while I agree with what Tom said, his performances haven't been consistent enough to kind of rank him among the Bales and Canes and people that really set new levels for Spurs. Nonetheless, I think he did step up at a number of big moments and will be remembered fondly for that. You know, you like to think that, you know, whenever it is he goes, Spurs fans will kind of look back on the good times and not the howlers in big matches against kind of Arsenal and City that have been a bit too frequent.
Yeah, no, Spurs fans being Spurs fans, they will focus on the howlers. But merci, Hugo, and Ale Hugo, over the final few months, if they are to be the final few months of his career. Some big games, of course, coming up. Preston away in the FA Cup next, Manchester City at home, Leicester away, then AC Milan away, and games against West Ham and Chelsea at home before the end of February. So he's going to be busy. Now, just before we go, the bit I am most worried about, Dan has a game for us. What is it?
So this game needs to be named at some point. I haven't thought of an appropriate name for it, but what I'm going to do is I scoured Twitter for three insane, or perhaps not insane, but strong takes about Tottenham from this week. And then I made up a take about Tottenham. I'm going to read them out to you, and you've got to guess which three are legitimate takes on Tottenham and which one I've made up.
This is exciting.
I'm excited. And the others are...
There's one made up take from me, and the other three I found on the interweb.
I'm guessing you're not revealing who wrote them in terms of...
I'm going to give a bit of detail.
Okay. That sounds good.
The first take is from We Want Our Tottenham Back. And he says, or they, we don't know. Sol Campbell did more for Tottenham than Enoch ever have. The second take is from Tom. And he says, and I believe this was tweeted during the Fulham game, "This is appalling. Not even the end of cycle stuff. That was about a year ago. Some of the attempts at playing football would embarrass the bottom three." The third take is from Gavspur. He says, "Rescind Lloris's contract immediately. Seriously, there is no bigger loser in world football." And the last take is from World of Hotspur, who says, "Dan Kilpatrick is a messenger for Daniel Levy, and likely taking financial incentives from the club."
Well, that one's definitely true.
Absolutely, yeah. No question about that.
My inclination would be to think, with us both being called Tom, that you've thrown in a red herring there with the Tom guy. So I'm not sure Tom does actually exist. That would be where I'd be leaning to so far.
Yeah.
Can't be true, can it?
That I'm going Sol Campbell one. Surely, I mean, they're not all insane, but the Campbell, I mean, that is total insanity. Okay. Has to be the Campbell one.
Marcus is going Sol Campbell. Tom B?
Well, I just feel like that's quite a strong thing for you to have made up. So I don't think that's going to be you. But if it is, wow, that's a insight into your twisted sense of humour. So I'm going to stick with my red herring of the Tom, which was quite a soft take.
You're going some of the attempts at football would embarrass the bottom three. Okay. Tom A?
I think the Lloris one is a possibility. The Dan one is a definite possibility, as we all know. And the Campbell one, I agree, is extreme, but it does sound quite Twitterish. So I'm going to go for the other one.
The Tom.
Sorry, which one do you think is fake?
I was hoping you would fill in the blank there.
So we've got Dan Kilpatrick is a messenger for Daniel Levy and taking in financial incentives in the club. We've got Tom saying this is appalling. It's not even end of cycle stuff. Some of the attempts at football embarrass the bottom three. We've got Sol Campbell did more for Tottenham than Enoch ever did. And we've got rescind Lloris's contract. There's no bigger loser in European football.
Okay, I think the Sol Campbell one is fake. That's my final answer.
You're all wrong.
Oh.
It was rescind Lloris' contract. There's no bigger.
Of course.
I should have realised.
About poor Hugo. He is a
good game, Dan.
It'll be continued next week, and we'll think.
Well, let's discuss in the post pod panel.
It's a game we'll work on when we have our team meeting. That is it for our first edition of the Tottenham Way. I hope you've enjoyed it. Special thanks to Vincent Duluc from L'Équipe. And to Tom A, that's Tom Allnut, Tom B, Tom Barkley, and Dan Kilpatrick. Please like, share, rate the podcast, and follow us on Twitter at the Tottenham Way. We'll be back soon. For now, from me, Marcus Buckland, goodbye. And of course, come on, you Spurs.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
This podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.